This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go!
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Binstown TV. My name is Jim, and today I'm here with the newest member of the Beacon 23 crew, Brian. Kyle unfortunately couldn't make it this week, but Brian has stepped up to the plate, and he's ready to talk some Beacon 23. I'm really excited to hear his thoughts on the series. It hasn't been week to week for Brian. He did a quick binge in the last week or so, so I'm really excited to hear what a binge person thinks of this show. But first, as always, a little Binstown housekeeping. If you're listening from our Silo or Beacon 23 feed and you're not familiar with our other podcast coverage, then we just want to remind you that we cover so many different shows and we would love to have you as a listener for those as well. We recently covered Gen V, Fall of the House of Usher, and Attack on Titan. And besides Beacon 23, we're also currently covering Jujutsu Kaisen and A Murder at the End of the World. Coming up, we have Reacher Season 2, the live-action adaptation of Yu Yu Hakusho, and Percy Jackson and the Olympians. So what I'm trying to say is we cover a lot of TV, and we want you all to come for the ride. All you have to do is search Binstown TV on any of your favorite podcast apps or check us out at BingeTownTV.com. All right, we're here, episode 6. Brian, like I said, I'm really excited to hear your thoughts because this is a binge for you. Me and Kyle, we're doing week to week. It is a slow burn, so it was interesting to think about week to week. Now, you have this all binged in a couple days, a week, or whatever it is, and we're both equal playing fields here. So let me know, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think my broad reaction is that it's good, not great. And yeah, to expand on that, you used the term slow burn. It is definitely a slow burn. And I think being able to consume it as a binge rather than week to week probably enhanced my experience because I could just kind of streamline it. Point A to, now that we're in this episode 6 is the one we're going to be covering. I think this was probably the best episode of the first 6, and probably episode 5 was the best before that. So we're finally starting to get a little bit of movement here, some action and some answers to the mystery. I think, and I'm sure you guys have talked about this, I should say I actually haven't gotten the chance to listen to your guys' coverage, so my apologies if I repeat any theories or any thoughts on the show.
Yeah, no worries at all because we're busy. We're all covering different shows at the same time, and that's why I appreciate you jumping on. We cover so much, and once we're in our little zone covering something, it's hard to jump from show to show.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I'm covering Murder at the End of the World, and that is also very AI-centric, which is kind of interesting because AI isn't always so prevalent in the shows that we cover, but it certainly is in Murder at the End of the World and definitely in Beacon 23. And they kind of handle it differently. I think that is what has gotten me through kind of the sluggish first 4 or 5 episodes is these interactions with Bart, the AI, and I guess Aster's is Harmony too. It's very cool how the show is handling AI. It's humanizing it in a way that I don't really see. And it's really kind of, a realistic look at what AI could be 100 years down the line when it really is that advanced. And I love the interactions between the humans and the AI. And I just, ever since you approached us with this show, Beacon 23, I just thought that was such a cool concept, just a lighthouse in the middle of space and what they could do with it. I think my biggest disappointment is, and I can't even really expand on it, I thought they would kind of go more into kind of the mental deterioration that somebody could experience in that kind of isolation. And I guess we see it with Halen a bit, but I feel like his mental, whatever's afflicting him is because of the rocks. But we're going to get into all that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think that, and I don't want to be quoted on this because I haven't read the books, but I let Kyle know that I did a little bit of research, and the books are short stories, and they're not really adapted similarly to the show. Like you said, it's very different, and I believe that what you said you want is kind of where Hugh went with his books. So I think that they wanted to expand on the universe and turn it into a show. Honestly, me and Kyle talked about it too. It seems like for a while, each episode was becoming its own short story, and this continues that trend. And that would have been fine, and it is fine. Like, that's a cool concept. Mm-hmm. It's just, let me ask you this question. How do you feel about the fact that, you know, we're six episodes in, we're getting to the finale almost with eight episodes, and me and Kyle were talking about how it was a little weird that they were almost going with maybe villain or character of the week scenarios every single week, where you're not even, like, we had two full episodes out of six so far where you don't even see Aster or Halen.
Yeah. I thought it was odd, especially since we are kind of on a time crunch here. You know, there's not that many episodes, and they were presenting us with these seemingly disposable characters like Coley in episode three, kind of Aster's previous friendship or whatever, kind of her partner that they wind up killing. And I'm like, okay, I didn't particularly enjoy that character while she was on screen. I get that she was supposed to be kind of a representative of, was she with the QTA or the ISA?
She was QTA. And that's kind of another thing. They're not giving you a lot when it comes to QTA and ISA throughout the years of this show is changing. It's organically changing. And I kind of have an idea of what the deal is. But again, they're doing a weekly exposition of world building. But until this episode, I feel like they were giving us more questions than answers.
For sure.
But this episode, I do think, was the best episode of the season, and I really enjoyed it as a single episode, and I'm glad that we got the answers we got. I really like this episode.
Absolutely. And another one, well, I guess I can't completely say this, but another one more or less without Halen and Aster in it.
Yes, exactly. Well, right, true. My notes, and we could just jump ahead. I have notes, and we'll kind of go in order here, but let's just cut to the chase here. We find out a great reveal that the little girl is Aster. So we found out that Parsim is Aster. Now, in my notes, soon as I saw the necklace, I thought that was going to be the mom. Like, I thought Parsim would be the mom. She would grow up and then give that necklace to Aster. Because I'm going to have a little bit of questions. I understand that Bart specifically said that Parsim was so young that she doesn't really remember her time on the beacon.
Right.
But, I mean, she's five or six. You tell me you can't remember that you've never been on the beacon before, and then you show up as Aster. I mean, we can get into that now, or we can get into that later. That's why I thought it would have made more sense for it to be the mom and then hand the necklace down to Aster, and then it makes sense that she's returning to the beacon because she's destined to return to the beacon. But
yeah. It makes sense given that Bart explicitly said she was too young to form memories, but the child seemed old enough to form memories, which is why it kind of didn't jive 100%. But I think we got to take Bart at his word. Right when I saw the necklace come out, I'm like, it's Aster. I was a little bit upset that it took me that long because we literally only know one female character who's like a big shaker in this story. But it somehow was a good reveal. So kudos to the show for that.
I will say, in our defense though, they have really been utilizing random characters to tell us stories where they don't necessarily have any future in the actual story. So yes, it's kind of obvious and it's weird that we didn't guess it, but at the same time, maybe that was by design and that's why they were hitting us with those random characters of the week and we would just say, okay, here's another story, giving us some backstory on what's the deal with the relic and this and that. And
yeah,
you know. And I don't know, if I didn't get the reveal at the end, maybe I would have been a little bit more upset about this episode because I would have said, again, we're meeting some characters that don't really matter because it's in the past.
Yeah, and I think I just want to keep talking about it. That's one of my gripes with the thing. There are some really cool elements, like we were talking about the QTA and the ISA. I'm like, okay, those are some cool things. And you said they're kind of organically growing in the background. I just don't know what they can possibly do as a payoff for that other than just have them as the anonymous big corporations that are kind of pulling the strings in this world. but I don't know enough about the world. And in 8 episodes, there's no way I'm going to know enough about the world to get a payoff for that. So,
yeah, yep. You're right in line with me and Kyle, because we were saying for the longest time, like, we just don't know where this show is going, because you can expand this world and just go. Or you can make it a show about the Beacon, but you have to be careful what you give us and what you don't give us, because in one side of things, we're going to say, you're giving us too much, now we want more, and it seems like there's no reason to give us that much. On the other side of things, it could be, you're not giving us enough. It's tough. Yeah. It's a tough thing to juggle, especially now, like, just to start this episode, boom, we have a whole nother thing being brought up, and it's called the Column. And I guess they're just, like, rebellious figures, and I wish I wrote down this actor's name because I noticed him from other things. I believe he was in Ozark. He was in some other stuff. But, yeah, just bringing the Column into things is, it's like, all right, here's another entity that 2 more episodes, you're going to be talking about 3 entities here, QTA, ISA, and the Column.
And it kind of tracks because they have established that as we're expanding into the unknown expanses of the universe, they're trying to colonize, and some of these colonizations are not going very positively,
right?
Which is forcing these protests. So maybe this rebellion group, such as the Column, whatever, could, it makes sense in this world that they would come to be.
That makes sense. Yep.
You're talking about the guy Kier, the redhead?
Yes.
Kind of seems like a dope mustache. This Kier, huh?
He had some sweet beer to drink, though. I mean, Bart hooked him up, but he totally sandbagged him. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Bart's been hot and cold. What surprises me the most about Bart is how hard he rides for Solomon. Like, Solomon didn't really seem like that great of a keeper, given the, you know, depth chart of keepers that Bart has seen. Though I digress. I agree.
It seems like every single keeper at some point starts to get obsessed with whether it's the artifact or the relics we're finding out are the rocks. So as the Beacon Keepers are in this isolation, they start becoming more obsessed with it. And yeah, Solomon seemed like he was fully obsessed with his discovery of these relics. He was calling them Solominium or whatever he was calling. Naming it after himself, of course. But I thought it was really cool that we started the episode. We get Dr. Avalon. We talked about her a little bit in the prior episodes with Milan Olive, where he is trying to get the information from the original Beacon Keeper. And even in that episode, you knew that Bart was very into and loyal to Dr. Avalon. So it was cool to get this story explaining how Bart came to be, how the first ever Beacon Keeper was dealing with being a Beacon Keeper. I mean, it was funny how she's fully in this ISA suit. You could see at first she's like all official, and then obviously as you get into your isolation, you start being a little bit more business cash. Like, why even care? But
did
another
explicitly define for us that ISA and QTA jointly created the beacons?
So this is where I wrote in my notes, when you meet Avalon, you hear her getting her welcome package saying, like, thanks so much for being. Now, the person speaking from the QTA side of things is actually Milan Olive's voice, right?
Yep.
So he is the QTA. He created the beacons. He created all of the AI. At the time of the first Beacon Keeper, I'm assuming that is still when the QTA and the ISA are working together. We find out in episode, I believe that's 4 with Milan Olive, that eventually he militarizes and he breaks off and it becomes a separate entity, and that just is the evolution of QTA. But at the time of Dr. Avalon, it seems like they're still joint as one, meaning like they work together. QTA built the beacons, the ISA are still the governing force.
Yeah, no, I just like that they included that element here. But like I said, it is good world building in the background. I just don't know what the payoff could possibly be.
Me and Kyle were wondering, and this is the problem with it being MGM Plus. Like, we don't know the power of MGM Plus. We're worrying who's actually watching this show. The only show that I know that has gotten really big off MGM Plus is the show from the creators of Lost, and it has some of the actors from Lost, and it's apparently a really good show, and it's definitely on my list. But every other show I've hardly ever heard of. So.
Yeah.
Our thoughts are maybe you give it a season, see if it does well, and then boom, you can expand it if you want to however far you want to go. But it's I don't know when it comes to MGM Plus.
While we're on the topic of MGM Plus, this is the only show that I've seen from it. The production value looks pretty solid. I think this is a well-made show. Well-acted, Lena Headey aside, like, well-acted from top to bottom. I think this is a quality production.
Fully agree.
I just don't know if I'm 100% captivated on it. But if they go full in into this kind of universe, if you will, yeah, I'll go all in too. It's a cool concept for sure.
Yeah, and I thought it was really cool that Avalon, they let us know that she actually came from Earth. So she's one of the last people to leave Earth and become a beacon keeper. That was sweet. She brings the lighthouse picture and puts it up on the beacon, so it's been there ever since she's been there.
Yep.
Basically, the moral of the story when it comes to Avalon is that she gets entranced by this light, this entity that she's seeing outside the beacon.
Well, and I suppose we can just refer to it as the artifact from henceforth,
right? True.
Yeah.
So this artifact, I noticed right away that it was cool that they said in the story that Bart couldn't see it. And we know from episode 4 that when Milan becomes his higher evolutionary self, he can't see it anymore because he's part AI. And they're saying that the AI can't see the artifact. So we're keeping with that trend here, which is going to be very important, I would assume. Very, very cool how they were able to utilize that fact to pinpoint where it's going to be, where it is, because nothingness shouldn't exist for Bart. He should be able to see something. So seeing nothing is weird, which was cool. I really like that. And then she just starts deteriorating. She's sleepwalking. She's only caring about the artifact. I mean, it seems like that's the trend that goes on when you start to notice this artifact, whether it's an alien life form or not. I don't know. We can get into theories in a little bit, but what did you think about the whole thing with Avalon and her deterioration?
I thought it was good. I thought it was, I mean, her and Halen both tried to kind of do the spacewalk without a suit. I don't think Farut ever got to that point, maybe jumping the gun, but kind of just the different ways that it has affected the several people that it definitely has come into contact was. This Avalon flashback was really cool. What exactly did she do to track it when she was just like, put all your sensors in my line of sight? Like, how did that lead to...
She was marking where it was going, but then just like the little girl, she was getting those visions or that gut feeling, and she's like, I just know where it will be next. And she's marking whatever it is on the screen, and then when my thoughts were that the last point on the screen was her guess, and then when it happened, she's telling Bart, listen, follow my line of sight, and she's trying to confirm that he sees that nothingness.
Right.
Okay. And I'm not a scientist, but I mean, the guy, he starts using the calculations to try to figure it out, and apparently so does the mother of Aster. So we have, that's Farut and Grisha, which Grisha was cracking me up because of Shadow and Bone. But
yeah, true that.
Yeah, so Bart in this episode, we could talk about Bart a little bit just because I've been down on Bart big time. You know, I said there's nothing scarier than an AI who makes his own decisions and thinks he's willfully making his own decisions, but he thinks he's doing the right thing and he's not really taking any kind of advice from humans or whatever. And obviously we get a couple things that are like crazy where he kills somebody, kills Milan Olive. He tells the past beacon keeper he loves her. Like he's got the feels. Like he's got feelings. And we talked about Westworld, me and Kyle. There's a lot of things. It just seems like Bart is an evolved AI, which we don't know if we couldn't figure out if he's evolved or if someone like Harm is just choosing to stay on course, and she could do the same as well. But we have to assume, I guess, that partially the child, Aster, and he says like he learned a lot from the relationship and the growing of Aster. And
profoundly changed him.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah, that's something Bart seems different. And also, he has been around since the inception of the beacon, so he is a hundreds of year old AI. So
yes,
I like to think that Bart is kind of an enhanced AI, and he has kind of transcended his boundaries. And it's really cool the verbiage he uses. He's like, I can't. he's like, yes, I have programming, but I can also change like how I respond to certain situations based on the people I have met. Like, it's very cool how he phrases it in a way that an AI would have to justify. Yeah, I'm going against my damn programming.
Yeah.
But for sure, I mean, a complete 180 from the whole Milan flashback where it's, you know, AI gone wrong. It's going sentient and making the decision to kill someone. And, you know, if you want to take it at surface level, it was that. But he ran the simulations. He genuinely believed that Milan would cause more human death if left unchecked. And he did what he felt had to be done. I feel like in this episode, they are completely painting his kind of, what is the word for it? Not sentience, but ability to choose your own, make his own decisions in a much more positive manner. Case in point, I think Keir even said, I didn't know an AI could go against their programming when he lied to protect this family. Essentially, he could have reported them immediately to the ISA. Yes. So, you know, it goes both ways with the AI. It's not just doom and gloom. You know, they can use that ability of choice for the positive.
Yes. And it's interesting to see how the show is deciding to bounce back and forth between flashbacks, and you have to try to remember what point A, what point B, what point C, and what present quote-unquote day is, because this would technically be before Milan and obviously way before Aster and Halen. So it seems like based on these flashbacks, our boy Bart is getting a little unhinged. I don't get it, just like you don't get why he was so like, I hate Halen and he's a POS and he killed Solomon, when he sees the tape and he knows that's what the deal is. He just seems more... like, it's like the thing that I was saying with Kyle. I was like, it's scary to have an AI when it's not on programming if it's not doing the right thing. Like, if I was Halen and Solomon dies and Halen last episode basically has to turn off Bart's voice, I would be like, I wouldn't be able to sleep. I would be so scared that this thing is going to do. I mean, we know it can create a bug that can go up your nose and stuff. Like, I would not be able to sleep with Bart around. And this is the first episode that we're seeing Bart, like, with Parsum, you know, obviously Aster, but, you know, playing hide and seek and loving this little girl and all this stuff. This is the first episode where I'm like, all right, Bart's my boy. You know, I liked him. What was the previous Beacon Keeper was Sophia, right? Does that sound right?
Right before Halen was Solomon, of course. I guess right before Solomon would have been Sophie, or Sophia was her name.
Right. So what I mean is that, you know, he has Aster and the two parents, and then obviously eventually we get to Sophia. And, like, he seems okay except for when he makes his turn and he starts to go against Olive and say, I'm going to kill him and all that kind of stuff. But present day Bart, the entire time, has been a little unhinged.
Yeah, for sure. And that could be a result of, you know, when the series starts, he has kind of had the status quo of Solomon, who was assumedly like a beacon keeper who was placed there through the proper channels, you know, ISA approved, be kind of usurped by Halen. And, you know, we saw the tapes. It was justified, the actions that Halen took, but that would also rock Bart's world. So it kind of makes sense that he would still be on his toes, if you will, even in the present day. So this Bart and Keir interaction, though, where do we place it with regards to those beacon keepers? Because if Keir was able to go essentially dock himself and not have to interact with a beacon keeper, we have to be between beacon keepers at this point in time, right?
Yes, because he says when he's talking to Keir, it's been 10 years, I think, when he's making the beer. He says, sorry, there's no artificial coloring and stuff. I haven't had a beacon keeper in 10 years or so. Maybe it's between Parsum, Baby Aster, and now.
If it went Farouk and Grisha to Sophia to Solomon, I would assume it's somewhere between the transition from Sophia to Solomon.
Yes, that's what I meant. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
I agree. Fully agree on that.
They are intentionally ambiguous, so I think it's up to us to kind of decide, but the clues are there.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Yes, yes. And to end Avalon's story, she goes into the light and she disappears. She leaves her ship. Her little ship is gone. It just starts floating away, and she is missing. And obviously, when we're getting close looks at this artifact, it looks like what the artifact looks like at the end of episode 5, when they're looking up at it and they're seeing it for the first time. So where is this taking us? I don't even have a theory, to be honest. I have a theory about the artifact, kind of, that I don't even know if I like it anymore, that I talked about in our solo cast in episode 5. And I could bring that up at the end of the episode. But yeah, Avalon disappears. And obviously, when we get to the couple with Parsim, Parsim is very much so attracted to this artifact. And we would assume that if she could have got to it, she would have gotten to it and disappeared too. I don't know where it's taking them. And I don't even know if we're going to get where it's taking them. I would hope so, I guess. That's why I don't know what this show's about. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's so true. I don't know what this show is about, but it seems to be about alien rocks. At the moment,
yeah,
we are going into these rocks. So I would hope we get an answer, or at least kind of a nod in the direction of where these people might be going off to. My only tinfoil hat is that, like, this artifact is quite literally the last remnants of a civilization who has already gone through the steps of human evolution, enhanced to this transcendent AI. And I only got this when you kind of connected the dots between Milan was undetectable
right.
from Bart. So, like, maybe that's what it is. All of human evolution yielded this artifact, this rock formation structure, and we're all just sentient rocks now. But in that process,
with New York accents,
yeah we're rocking here. That's just a dumb rock joke. But I mean, wouldn't that be something if Milan was harping on, oh, I want everybody to be unified, and his goal was achieved? We're all just stupid rocks, though, not able to actually do anything, but we are one transcendent unified being.
Well, that's,
if you will.
And that goes back to what Kira is saying about the purpose of his quote unquote rebellion or the calm. It's saying that we're nothing if we can't interact with each other. And like you said, how ironic would it be if the higher evolution that Milan is looking for is, you know, everyone's combined into one, whatever that thing is, one artifact, but you're just all little rocks that are,
yeah,
got God knows what the hell that is. So
the irony, it's not lost on us, Jim.
Yeah, we got it, dude. We figured this show out. We figured it out. So now we get to our first couple beacon keepers, and we get some more background information, world building here. So they started going with couples because the isolation was getting to beacon keepers. So they said couples were now allowed as long as they were infertile and they could prove they were infertile. And that was ISA regulations. The couple is Farut and Grisha, and they are the ones that introduce us to Bart as his droid drone form. And they say it can last a lifetime. So this Bart that we know in present day was, he became a droid or drone, whatever you want to say, by the couple. And very, very quickly, we find out that this couple, our girl is pregnant. I mean, immediately you meet her and she's sick. She's throwing up and, you know, she's saying, oh, shit. And they thought that they were infertile. So they're going to keep the baby. And Bart is against it, but this is where we get the information that Bart eventually lets it happen because they basically told him to let it happen. But then as the baby's growing, he gets attached. It changes him. It evolves him. And then we get Parsim being born basically as a 4 or 5 year old because they say they'll be there for 5 years.
Yeah, that's when their assignment ends and they're like, we'll figure it out. We got 5 years. And we essentially flash forward 4 years and I guess it would be 7 months. We're about
four-ish months till
they're getting snatched up. And they come up with the plan. They're going to leave and just jump ship a couple months before with just a random supply. Some more world building where they're going over potential homes. But you got a thought. I want to hear it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess if you think about it, we're saying they're there for 5 years, and technically they want to leave at 4 years and 7 months, but really, in present day of the story, it's even less so than that because they're trying to leave before the five-year mark.
Yeah, true
that. So this girl, it would take her 9 months, obviously, to be born, so she's actually not five, and she's kind of like three, almost four-ish, so I guess
four,
she's younger than we thought, but still... She seems
older. Which is obvious. They don't have her talk except for the gibberish. So like,
right. And saying no, I think she says no and things like that. But otherwise, yeah. So I guess I just think it would have made more sense to make it the mom and then have Aster be born later. But hey,
I'm not too upset
not
about this one. I think that's just you, actually.
Yeah. It's not a big deal to me. I just think. Maybe because I wanted to be right, and I wanted to guess it right. I was a little pissed at myself.
Fair enough there.
Farouk does say something to the effect of, they'll be happy that we have a kid, because, like, population preservation. So, did you hear that line drop?
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. I guess they are already not on the verge of extinction, but, like, the human population is declining.
This was crazy to me, because... This episode, we find out that there's no alien life, and me and Kyle thought that there was a line in the early episodes that they said that there was alien life, but maybe not. So the fact that we're talking about a scenario where Halen travels 84,000 systems or whatever it is to get to this beacon,
mm-hmm.
if you're thinking about all of this, these universes and all of the space basically that has to be filled up, and there's no alien life, and it's just humans. I mean, think about it. Take Earth and just spread it with the human life. It just seems like it makes sense that there probably isn't a lot of, you know, you need more human life. Yeah, whatever. But that was a shock to me. That was a shock that there's no alien life found so far.
Just seems weird, but that kind of is the crux of why everybody's so fascinated about this artifact. I mean, Keir even says, getting ahead of ourselves, they came across an alien artifact and Grisha's first idea was to just blow it up. And that's also why the obsession of Farouk is kind of justified. If you like thought there was any chance, even hundreds of years in the future when we've actually been able to explore space, you'd be pretty obsessed with that. Speaking of Farouk, he is the first one that the artifact presents itself to. That's kind of on their first day or thereabouts. And then fast forward a bit more, and Parsum is the next one. And it's after Parsum's exposure that she starts kind of speaking the gibberish, alien language, whatever it is, drawing kind of the triangles. She's just exhibiting some weird behavior, this Parsum.
Yeah. She's drawing all these crazy things.
Kicking
She's singing
mom.
Songs that, are, yeah. She kicks her mom right in the face, breaks her nose, and then you put a sweet little piece of tape on and it disappears. Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Love that for them. But yeah. I was very interested when it started getting into the parts with Parsum / Aster getting a little weird. And I say this in my episode with Kyle, the last one I did with him, and in the solo cast, you don't know what the goal of this artifact is. Are you going to suck in Avalon and she's going to be like in heaven, quote unquote? Like, is it going to be the best thing ever? Or is it like you're killing her? You don't know what their goal is. You don't know what their purpose is. I mean, we don't know what the purpose of the rocks in episode 4, bringing Aster and Halen here. They basically say like the purpose was so that they could become the artifact again, but we don't know what the purpose of the artifact is. We don't know what this thing is. It a villain? Is it a protagonist? We have no idea. I mean, my guess was that Milan was going to become the main antagonist, but we haven't really heard much from him since his episode.
Still around.
Oh, he's around. He's definitely going to be a thing. I think he would be a good big bad, but again, two more episodes left.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do here? Is the artifact going to be an evil thing? I don't know.
In the episode where Halen was having his dreams, the episode was titled Rocky. I guess it was last episode.
Yep,
the Rock is like literally talking to him with words.
Yeah.
Was that supposed to be the words of one of his former like army buddies? Is that what it was? Or are we supposed to take that as the Rock communicating with him literally with words?
So Halen's different as far as we know because he breathed in the fumes of these rocks and it attached to his brain and he's actually hallucinating. So maybe the hallucination is, well, the hallucination is allowing him to understand the rock in the way the rock wants to communicate with him. I don't know. Like, for all we know, Parsom speaking with the artifact when she was speaking gibberish, it could have been, like, it could have been understood back and forth. They could have been talking to each other saying, hey, man, what's good? How you doing? What are you doing out there? Come hang out. Like, we don't know. We're seeing it from another point of view, where in Halen's situation, we're seeing it from his point of view. But I don't know. I mean, I went ahead and said in episode 5, like, the rock talking didn't do it for me, like, at all. Like, I didn't know if they were trying to be funny with, like, the way he was talking to him. I was like, this isn't doing it for me. They reeled me back in like crazy this episode. But episode 5, I remember talking to Kyle on the side being like, I don't know what the hell just happened in this episode. I thought it was like fine. Like, I thought the episode was fine. I just thought it was so weird with the rock stuff.
Maybe they did that intentionally because I feel like this episode gave us a little bit more of context as to why what happened last episode might have been possible. But presenting that first made it just seem so outrageous. So I was right there with you.
Yeah, yeah. To be honest, the rest of this episode really has to do with the fact that Parsom now is the one deteriorating. Farut is deteriorating in a way where he is becoming obsessed with the relic, but he's, or the artifact, but he's not as much as Parsom and Avalon in the past. Yeah, we don't get Parsom's point of view, but we have to assume that she's probably hallucinating. She's probably doing exactly what Avalon was doing, where she's sleepwalking. She knows where the artifact's going to show up, that kind of stuff, where Farut is just obsessed with the calculations and figuring it out.
Obsessed with his work, absolutely.
Right,
and that they could be trying to present that as a red herring, but no, I think those are two distinct and separate obsessions / acting crazy.
Right, right.
So, and it all kind of culminates in this scene in the cupola? Cupola?
Yeah, the cupola. Yeah, that's what
the
I have.
Cupola, yeah. Where Parsom sneaks out of bed with Grisha and goes up to the cupola, because untight, and Farut follows her up there and really sees her interacting with this thing, kind of like changing her tone, whispering, singing almost, and this thing seems to be like responding to it. You know, Grisha wakes up and they kind of hash it out where Farut lays his cards on the table. He's like, no, this could be a breakthrough. We have to study her. She's the key. You know, she's communicating with it. And Grisha's like, nah, you're talking crazy town. This is our daughter.
This is our daughter. Yeah.
And this is where the artifacts become the relics.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not sure what the significance is going to wind up being, but it's very cool that right when it gets demolished and artifact becomes relics, that is when Bart, it comes into his perception that these things exist. He's like, okay, I gotcha.
Yes, I can now see the rocks. I understand that the rocks exist. Very interesting. So I still think it's going to have something to do with Milan again, with him being some kind of antagonist in the next couple episodes.
Yeah,
whether they set it up for a season 2 or not, I have no idea. But like I said, it has nothing to do for the most part with the books, I think. And we are going to have Hugh on the pod at the end of the season to talk to him about it. So we'll have a cool conversation with him. Maybe we'll get some snippets out of him for season 2 of Silo, which is interesting too, because Silo, I don't know if, again, because it's so different, I don't know if relics is a thing in his books, but relic is a part of Silo. It's an important part of Silo. They call things in Silo relics, and I'm pretty sure that translated from the books. I don't know if that's similar with Beacon 23 or not, but relics in both shows, you know, just had to throw that out there.
And for our audience, I am a 100% Hugh Howie newbie. This is my first. I haven't even touched Silo. You know, I'm going
to
have
to touch Silo.
I'm going to. Yeah. Well, don't say touch it like that, but I will.
Yes.
I will. Now I might have to binge that since we'll be talking to Hugh Howie. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
You guys sing its praises, too. And Apple TV has been doing some good work.
Yeah, Silo really was very, very enjoyable, especially for a show. It's very similar to how you found Shadow and Bone and said, yo, let's try it out. And we ended up going, oh, cool, this show's great. It was like that, because I just saw the trailer, threw it out there, ended up being very fun. Everybody liked it.
And now we're here.
Now we're covering Beacon 23 specifically for that reason. So
talking rocks, baby.
Talking blue New York accented rocks. but yeah, so we're basically at the end of the episode here. We have some more with Kier. We have some more with the reveal, obviously. But basically, Bart sandbags Kier big time, gets him drunk, gives him some beers before he gets busted. I do think it was cool that Bart says, like, hey, man, when you're in jail, when you're in isolation, think about how you're going to change the world. And I feel like he's going to be something.
Absolutely. Because
Bart does agree with his thoughts.
And there is
just not the way that he's going about it.
Yeah, there is something to be said. Bart could have wasted his time with any old story. He's like, no, Kier, everything I told you was factual. And, you know, these are important details of this grand story revolving around the artifact. So I completely agree. This Kier guy is going to come back. And that almost brings me to, I feel like all of these characters that we said at the beginning were kind of just one episode, one and done's. I'm going back to episode 2 when kind of the bandits were arriving. Did that kid escape?
He did.
So I feel like he's going to come back. Milan, we think, is going to come back and be an antagonist. Now we have Kier, who could very well come back. So I would like if that's how they kind of went about it, or maybe not.
I agree. I don't know. Me and Kyle talked about the kid. We don't really know what his purpose would be, but he got away for a reason, I feel like. So
had to.
Yeah, and we know that Bart has no problem killing people. So if he thought Kier was somebody that should have been killed, he would have killed him and not called the authorities. So I thought that was very interesting, and I feel like he will come back. Whether they make this some kind of larger multi-season storyline, I have no idea, but that was definitely interesting. Bart, again, making cognizant, sentient decisions. You know, guy's life's on the line. Gonna go to jail, you could kill him, you can do whatever you want. He makes a decision, decides he likes what this guy's picking up, what this guy's putting down, and he keeps him alive, just brings him to jail. Because you don't blow up his beacon. Don't blow up his beacon. And then we get to the end, the big reveal. So Bart is saying that, you know, after all these years, he doesn't really understand what I miss you or I'll miss you is going to be, but he wants Parsom to remember him. It's like one of those things where he's like, I get this feeling where I just don't want her to forget me.
Yeah.
He gives her the necklace, she gets her new identity, and it's Aster. Fade to black, boom, should have guessed it, but at the same time, I think that they wrote this series in a way where maybe you should have guessed it, but at the same time, I'm happy. Like, it's a good reveal, I think.
I wasn't looking for it, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Is why I didn't guess it. So, well done there. And I mean, that gives our two main characters of Halen and Aster a connection that we did not know at all until now, because they have both been affected by this artifact, which...
Yes.
We don't even know if Aster has any knowledge of her previous tangles with the artifact.
Yeah.
I mean, the assumption is no. She probably has no recollection of it.
I thought that what they were giving, like, it looked like a little disc. So I thought what Bart was doing was giving her, like, videos of her on the beacon as her memories. Video. But instead, it's just, like, new identities. It was just, like, an identity card. But whatever. This is something I want to ask you, because I would have gone back and tried to rewatch, but we know that Aster does talk about her mom and her dad at times. She does say the dad leaves, right? Doesn't she say the dad left them?
I would have to go back and check the tapes, but I believe you.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it was said that the dad leaves and the mom, like, goes on her own way, and she basically isolates herself.
That would make sense. We did this episode see a definitive ideological split between the two and how they want to approach this family.
Yeah, I really wish that I could just, like, have right in front of me all the lines that have to deal with Aster and her mom, now that we have met the mom at the time of Aster being a child, because you have to assume, based on Aster's communications to Harm and Halen, that she doesn't have, like, the best relationship with her mom.
Oh, no.
Like, it was... So, but she obviously keeps the necklace, and she says, like, it's to remind me not to become what my mom became. So we don't know, you know, where that disconnect happens, because what we see from Aster's mom is a loving mother trying to take care of her daughter. Yeah.
Where did it all go wrong? Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to have the lines just to remember what Aster said specifically, but hey, we're trying to get this pod out ASAP, so we don't rewatch the whole season before we drop the eps.
If only.
Yeah. So that's it. Now, I'll give you my quick theory, throw it at you. It seems like it's not going to be this anymore, but when I watched the last episode, I immediately thought of the Magicians. And
okay.
When I did the solo cast, I basically pitched the Magicians, because you got to pitch the Magicians. And then I said, like, what I'm going to tell you basically isn't really a spoiler, but I can explain this episode of The Magicians in a vacuum, and you can understand my theory. And where I was going with it was the episode where they have the symbiote, like the symbiotic fungus.
Okay.
So my thoughts were that the rocks, or the blue liquid part of the rocks, are like some kind of symbiotic entity. And the reason I got that is because you breathe it in, just like in the Magician's episode. He breathes it in. It takes over his brain. The hallucinations become a thing. Now, I don't know if that's the best. Now that this episode, we're seeing that, like, Avalon is getting hallucinations, and I don't think she got any of the rocks in her brain. So, I don't know. But my thought were that the rocks are sentient. They're, I don't know, extraterrestrial life, just like our boy Farood is assuming. And the rocks were symbiotic in a way where you breathe them in, they take over your brain, and they control you. Now, we're seeing in this episode that they were one entity. They were broken up into pieces. So I don't think that is really a good theory anymore.
Yeah.
I really liked it based on what we saw in episode 5 on how it took over Halen. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm kind of past that now, because they do seem like they're going more like high evolutionary extraterrestrial than just like a symbiotic fungus or something like that.
Well, that certainly is a characteristic of whatever these are. They can kind of spore out like a fungus like that. I'm almost thinking it's these sentient rocks that are like, oh, damn, we took it too far. Now we're just rocks. Maybe they're like, let's reel it back now that we have kind of this hive mind spore ability, if you will. Maybe we should try and put ourselves back into humanity, so we have kind of the physical body to back it up. And maybe that is exactly what's affecting Halen right now. They just want that to be the state of a lot more humans. I like it.
Could be, yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe the whole point of what they want is to reverse their evolution. Reverse where they got, you know.
Yep.
Milan wants to get to where they are, doesn't realize that it's already a thing, and they got there and they don't like it. They want to go back because they realize they screwed up. You know, that's cool. I like that. So, any other theories, anything you want to talk about before we end this episode?
I got
any idea where the hell the show's going, dude?
No, not even a little bit. I was proud of myself for getting the two theories that I did. This show's just so out there. And honestly, now that I know that it is revolving around this mysterious artifact, I'm way more invested. I want answers, if I'm being honest, because it's a very different concept. You know, I've never seen space rocks that can talk as taking center stage. So I'm in. It's a unique story for sure.
Yeah. Definitely interesting that it was an actual, you know, the artifact was some kind of entity and Grisha blew it up. And for however long it's been, they've been in pieces, and their goal was to get back together to become the artifact once again. And somehow they took over Halen to get him to the beacon. Somehow, by destiny or however you want to say it, Aster gets back to the beacon, and we can assume that her childhood connection just grew throughout the years, and eventually when it was time, it lured her back in. she believes it's destiny, and we're finding out that they are connected somehow, and it's by these relics slash artifacts. So we'll get some answers, hopefully. We got 2 episodes left, man. All right, well, that's it, guys. We just finished episode 6. We have 2 more episodes left. Brian will be returning for the next episodes. We are having a blast covering it. It's a crazy show, confusing, but this was a strong episode. We can't wait to watch episode 7. We do have screeners, so maybe we have to watch it a little bit quicker than you guys. We'll see. But if you like what you heard, you can catch us at BingeTownTV.com. You can find us on any of your favorite podcasts at BingeTownTV. Like I said in the intro, we cover so many different shows, currently covering so many shows. In the future, we'll be covering a lot more shows in the next couple weeks. So many shows are coming up, a lot of big ones. So if you want to follow us along for the ride, all you have to do is type in BingeTownTV on any of your favorite podcasts and smash that subscribe button. Or BingeTownTV.com. It's all there. Follow us on socials. Our Discord is a blast. We love talking to everybody about the different shows. We have a Beacon 23 feed. We have feeds for Murder at the End of the World. Every show we cover, there's a feed, and we have so much fun talking to you all. That link will be in the description. Otherwise, guys, email us, DM us. We love talking to you all. We'll see you next week. We are Bingetown TV, and thank you so much for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.